Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. This is Bruce Norris. Today we're joined by David Burson. David was the chief economist at Fannie Mae from 1989 to 2007. September of 2007, David was appointed the chief economist and strategist for the PMI Group. David has a PhD in economics from the University of Michigan. David, welcome to our show.
Bruce, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
What is the main function of PMI insurance in the marketplace?
Well, mortgage insurance, private mortgage insurance, is there to make housing more affordable for people.
Okay.
Lenders, in most circumstances, are risk averse. They don't want to make loans to people, or they prefer not to make loans to people who don't have a lot of money to put down. Or at least historically, that's been the case. And so the mortgage insurance business grew up to take on some of the credit risk that lenders didn't want to take on. For example, if a borrower had only 10% of the purchase price of a house to put down on a house, they would have to borrow 90%. The lenders typically prefer not to have borrowers not take on more than 80% of that risk. So mortgage insurers would insure the additional risk to the lender, and as a result, the borrower could then get the mortgage, and historically, they would not have been able to get the mortgage.
So if PMI insurance was not available, there would be probably a lot less people being able to purchase homes in our country. Would that be true?
That is indeed the case.
Okay. You're the largest in our country, but you also do insurance for other countries as well?
Yes. We have subsidiaries in a number of countries around the world.
Okay. You mentioned an interesting topic, risk-averse lenders, which, judging from what I've been reading in the last few months in the newspaper, they seem to have taken on maybe too much risk. What was the difference in the lending practices, let's say, between 2003 and 2005 that had never existed before?
Well, first let me say that lenders seem to push the credit envelope on a periodic basis, every 10 years, every 15 years, every 20 years. And it may be that simply you have new people involved and they simply forgot the mistakes the old ones made. But what happened in the more recent period was that we had a surge of investors in the market, and that pushed up home prices. And with home price gains, just astronomical, I think many people thought, many lenders included, that the risk of a mortgage, a high loan-to-value ratio mortgage, for example, or the risk of a mortgage to somebody who had very little down, or maybe was only marginal purchaser in terms of their income, if the house price is going up, it didn't matter. And so they forgot that, in fact, unsustainable trends eventually end.
And they have.
And they have to a significant degree.
When lenders get sort of fast and loose with money, does it usually coincide with price increases? Has that been the history? Because when you're saying every 10 years or so, it seems like that would be the time where it would be the most natural to do that.
It's not the only thing that pushes prices up, but certainly when lenders, again, push this credit envelope, it tends to be a period in which prices go up faster than they should have. If you look at the normal sort of economic and demographic things that would push housing activity, pushing the credit envelope adds to housing demand and pushes prices up still more.
What seemed to be different this time to me is that it used to be that lenders used to make loans, and many times they would portfolio the loan, and this time they were able to pass the risk on through vehicles that had never really existed before, certainly didn't exist to the quantity that they have this time. What are your feelings on the mortgage-backed securities and the CDOs that were created?
Well, to some extent, I would agree with you, but not completely.
Okay.
Portfolio lending started to shrink significantly in the 1990s as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac expanded. But they had pretty strict underwriting guidelines, so that the securities that went into the market from Fannie and Freddie were we're pretty good. We're relatively risk free. And what we saw starting, say in 2003, 2000, particularly 2004 and 2005, was a significant reduction in the securities that went to Fannie and Freddie. Instead, they were what were called private label securities, as opposed to GSE securities, where they were sold internationally, they were sold domestically to all sorts of buyers, but they didn't really have the underlying credit quality that securities had had in the past. So I think that the quality of at least some of the securities, certainly many of them were still very secure, but certainly the credit quality of some of the securities was much lower than investors had come to anticipate, but they didn't know that. And so I think investors were happy to buy these securities, assuming that they had still just as little credit risk as they had 5 and 10 years before.
And they didn't know that because they had obtained a AAA credit rating?
In part because they had a AAA credit rating. In part, the investors looked at the recent history of mortgage delinquencies and defaults and said, these are loans that don't go bad. They're mortgages. We're just going to buy.
Okay. It's probably hard to have defaults when you're going up 15 or 20% a year.
It's very difficult then. Certainly if a household gets into trouble and they have been in the house for any length of time, if you have 15% annual appreciation, any length of time might even be just a couple of months, you, as that household in trouble, can sell the house, take your own equity out, and the lender's made whole.
The number of foreclosures in our state in California has gone up probably by the end of 2008, will have gone up about 3,000% from the low. The most staggering statistic is that in 2008, they'll probably represent, as far as bank-owned properties being sold, one of every two sales in California. So I guess one of my questions is, I hear people say, other economists say that the worst is probably over. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm not sure the worst is over at any point in the housing market. I don't think home sales will stabilize until probably later this year. I don't think starts will stabilize until 2009. I don't think prices will stabilize till end of 2009 and beginning of 2010. And typically, the impacts on credit, delinquencies, and defaults lag all of those things. So, no, I don't think we're at the bottom yet.
Okay. Do you see that we're going to have a recession, or do you feel like we already are in one?
I think we're probably in a recession already. That's clearly a debatable point. It's possible, and I'm hopeful that forecast is wrong and we're simply through a very flat period of economic growth. But I do think it's more likely we started to go into recession. Now, I view that as, if we're in a recession, it's likely to be relatively short and mild, in large part because the Fed has already started easing monetary policy. And the Fed easing always impacts the economy with a lag. But they started easing in August, which means it'll have a big impact on the economy in the third quarter of this year. Plus, we have the fiscal stimulus package, and that will start to have a significant impact at the end of the second quarter, but really in the third quarter as well. So both those things together should help pull the economy out of any downturn we're in. But I think it's likely we went into recession in December, and we may not pull out till July or August.
What are the technical aspects of, say, that's how you know you're in a recession? What is it that an economist looks at and says, that's the evidence?
Well, it's interesting. Most people say, you need two negative quarters of real GDP growth. And in fact, that's a rule of thumb. It's not the definition. There is a group of economists who meet periodically. They're associated with the National Bureau of Economic Research at Harvard University. They're called the Business Cycle Dating Committee. And they look at a number of economic factors, the job market, manufacturing, industrial production, things like that, to look at a very broad view of the economy as opposed to a narrow view. Housing clearly has been in recession. That doesn't mean the national economy is in recession. So they look at very broad measures of the economy to try and get a handle on whether we're in recession. Unfortunately, they meet always with a significant delay on when the economy goes down. And it's often the case, funny enough, that they say a recession has begun. When the date they come out with the statement, mm-hmm. the recession's already over.
That's
so they if they came out a year from now, which is reasonable, they would say, hey, the recession began in December 2007. but perhaps a year now, we're already out of recession.
Okay, so it's really a very hard thing to determine. It's almost more accurate in arrears, if you will.
Oh, absolutely, and I can say with a lot of authority, your economists are particularly good at forecasting the past.
I wouldn't want your job. It's very difficult. Consumer spending is a big part of the economy. And have the consumers relied on pulling equity out of their homes to continue spending up till now?
Well, consumer spending is roughly two-thirds of all spending in the economy. And if consumers decide to pull back, then there's simply not enough in the rest of the economy to keep it going. And the economy certainly would go into recession then. There are a number of things that affect consumer spending. The most important always is wage and salary income. And that's why the job market is so important, unemployment rates, but particularly job growth. As long as job growth remains positive, then wage and salary income will be positive as well, and the bulk of consumer spending will be sustained. But it's also clear that in recent years, consumers have augmented their spending, one, from equity withdrawals from their homes, and that takes the form of either a home equity loan or simply a cash-out refinance. And then in addition to that, running up credit cards. And if you look at the payments that households make on credit cards, mortgages, auto loans, rental payments, if they happen to rent a house relative to their incomes, it's essentially at record high. Now, what the borrowing from their homes and running up credit cards means is that if wage and salary income slows, or if it even declines, if we really go into recession, then households won't have the ability to tap these other sources in order to keep spending up, and then any downturn could be made much worse.
One of the things that's occurred in California is that you have licensed agents making 50% of the income that they used to because there's half as many transactions. That doesn't really show up in unemployment, but it shows up in their household budget as not being able to make their payments.
Well, it's interesting. There are several states that whose job numbers have weakened substantially, and whose income numbers have weakened substantially, such as California, and it's primarily the downturn in real estate that's caused that. The rest of the California economy is doing reasonably well, but with real estate, you have builders, you have realtors, you have mortgage lenders, all of whom have suffered either outright declines in jobs or who have a significant cutback in income. So I think that's absolutely right, and it's one of the things holding the California economy back right now.
PMI is the largest provider of mortgage insurance in the United States, and that would seem to be kind of a risky proposition at the moment. So how are things at PMI right now?
Well, I'm not the right person to talk about PMI things directly.
Okay. Let's talk about...
It allows me instead to talk about what's happening in the market itself as opposed to the company.
How about in general for companies that are doing, had done bond insuring? We've heard a lot about there being a reduction in their ratings and so forth. What's the impact on the marketplace if a bond insurance company does lose their rating or goes down?
Well, it makes it more expensive for future issuers, you know, whether it's in the municipal bond market or another market, a reduction in the rating of the insurer on those things makes it then more expensive to bring that bond to market. And whether you're a company bringing an offering to market that is insured, you now have to offer a higher interest rate. And so there's less profitability for the shareholders of the company, or you're a municipality or a state where, again, you pay a higher interest rate, and as a result, the taxpayers have to pay a little bit more, and that's the ultimate impact.
Okay. A lot in the news has been made up of the trying to separate those two segments of bonds, where some of the companies want to separate the muni bonds from the subprime bonds. What's your take on that?
Well, it's a difficult... In theory, it may be a good idea. In practice, it's a very difficult thing to do. So we'll see if any of that actually occurs.
When you say in practice it's difficult, is that because there probably would be, I don't know, lawsuits saying that's probably not fair to somebody?
Well, yes, that's exactly right.
Okay. What would be the effect of the lenders that were relying on the bond insurance if, in fact, one of the bond insurance companies were unable to continue?
I'm not quite sure what the impact on the lender would be. I mean, the borrower.
Words, if they didn't have, if when I'm saying lender, I'm talking about the
issuer?
Entity. Yeah, the entity that was expecting the insurance to be there for them.
Well, you know, most municipal and state securities are pretty safe anyway. You know, even in California, with large budget deficit that we have now and the economic problems we're going to have, what are the odds that California defaults on an issue? They're pretty darn low.
Okay.
So, you know, in that sense, an investor who has purchased a security backed by the state of California probably doesn't have much to worry about.
No, I'm sure that's true. Is the anticipated default rate on mortgages quite a bit higher than anybody thought they would be?
Well, they are. In part because I don't think that people anticipated the extent of the price decline that we're seeing. When I was at Fannie Mae, 2003, 2004, we started to become concerned. We were among the first to be concerned. I'm not saying we were the very first. But a lot of people didn't become concerned until 2006 and 2007. So there were lots of mortgages made during that 03, 04, 05, even 06 period, with the assumption that price gains would be very strong. And even those of us who several years ago thought that, well, this simply can't be sustained, didn't know whether the final result would be either a period of time similar to what we saw, say, in the 90 to 95 period, where nationally we had price gains, but they were minuscule, and declines in some places like Southern California, versus a more substantial decline in prices, which is actually what we're seeing.
It's a little uncomfortable when you read articles and talking about price, and then at the last sentence it ends, we haven't seen this since the Great Depression. That type of thing is very concerning to some people. It seems to be probably exaggerated, but is this the most difficult time since your career began that lenders have seen?
The answer to that is no.
Okay.
We've seen more substantial. It is a very difficult time. I don't want to minimize that. But it's the most difficult time in decades, and that's certainly the case. You know, we had the 2001 recession, hardly any impact on housing at all. We had the 1991 recession, where there was a decent impact on housing. But you go back to the 81-82 recession, and that was the last time I moved to California. I was a professor in Southern California, and mortgage rates were 16.5% on the house we bought, and that was two mortgages with 16.5%. And the impact on the housing and mortgage markets was more difficult, was more troubling then. Now, the one thing that is worse this time is the impact on prices. On a national basis, we haven't seen price declines like this, probably not since the Great Depression, although clearly then they were much worse. Although regionally, we have seen price declines this big and even larger. For example, in the oil patch in the mid to late 80s, we saw price declines in Texas, Oklahoma, for example, Louisiana, that were far bigger than what we're seeing now. Now, those were very difficult times in those states.
Absolutely. Do you think that raising the Fannie Mae allowable loan limit to over $700,000 in these high areas, do you think that's a good move?
I think it will help them. It will help stabilize markets in those areas. It's not a panacea by any means. The impact it will have is limited, but it's positive.
Do you think that will be made permanent, or do you think that'll just be a very temporary thing?
Good question. It's certainly just temporary now. That's the way the law is written. Whether it ends up being permanent or not, it's hard enough forecasting interest rates, let alone what Congress and the President will do.
Okay. Well, speaking of what they are attempting to do, they have done, they certainly have had a lot of meetings trying to help things out. What's your take on, let's say, a moratorium on foreclosures that has been suggested for 30 days by, I think it was 8 of the major lenders?
Well, you know, you have to look at who is it that's in trouble. And people want to help borrowers who got in over their heads, who perhaps didn't understand what they were doing, or perhaps did, but they're just in an area where prices have fallen substantially. On the other hand, do you want to lend much support to investors who bought 5 or 6 condos? They can't afford any of them now. They've gone into default on all of them. And that's the real problem with broad-based approaches is you're helping everybody, including those who probably don't deserve it. On the other hand, it's very difficult to come up with programs that are more limited than that. You know, and as with the expansion of the conforming loan limit, this is not a panacea. It will help stabilize markets in the short run, but it's limited in its impact.
Okay. What signs do you look for when you're going out, let's say, a couple of years from now, and you say, okay, I'm now seeing signs that we're headed the other way, that we're recovering? What are those things that you look for?
Well, you know, if you look at the general economy, we would start to see stronger job growth, for example, an increase in manufacturing, an increase in industrial production, increase in orders for durable goods, things like that that tend to lead, or at least contemporaneous with the economy. In terms of the housing market, we like to look at the weekly mortgage bankers survey. Now, the problem in the last year has been that survey historically has not picked up subprime borrowers. And so in the last year, as borrowers have moved from the subprime market to the prime market, it has boosted the purchase applications number in the MBA survey. But to a large extent, that is done now. So if we start to see some more meaningful increases in purchase applications in the weekly MBA survey, it will now be far more suggestive of a pickup in demand for mortgages to buy homes, which would be a good leading indicator that the housing market is strengthening.
Okay. What does the bond yield spreads tell you about maybe the future of interest rates moves by the Fed? I know we've had severe reductions very quickly. Do you think that's likely to stick, or do you think they might be changing their direction before the end of the year?
Well, it depends on which spread you're looking at. Some of the spreads haven't narrowed at all, and in fact, they've continued to widen, which is typically what you would see as the economy moves into recession. It's one of the things that has helped convince me we are in recession now. So even as the Federal Reserve has eased monetary policy substantially, a lot of credit spreads have widened out, and I think it's quite likely as we move into this recession, as we start to have losses, not just in mortgages, but more broadly in credit markets, that a lot of these credit spreads will widen out still more, even with more Fed easing. And typically, you don't get credit spreads narrowing again until sometime after the recovery has begun.
You mentioned the very difficult years of 80 through 82, and that was a reaction to stagflation and trying to contain that. Do you see any chance of stagflation coming in the next few years for us?
Well, I mean, you could say we have some stagflation now in the sense that inflation has moved up, unemployment has moved up, but this is sure not your daddy's stagflation.
No.
Remember back then when unemployment rates were over 10% and inflation was nearly 20%. You know, inflation at 4%, unemployment at 5% is not a good thing. But it's hard to call it a significant bout of stagflation.
Sure, just much. It could be just a mild bout of
it
the
is,
same.
And I would expect that as we go into recession, you know, as we move into it, that the inflation numbers will start to come down.
This seems to be the most difficult housing market that I have seen, at least been aware of, in California as far as price declines. And yet the economy has been pretty resilient. So I guess one of the questions I'd like to ask is, what percentage typically is the housing market and all the jobs it has as far as the entire economy?
Well, it depends on how you measure it. There, you know, as most things in economics, there are lots of different ways you can measure it. You can measure, well, what's the impact just of housing construction? Well, what's the impact of housing construction and existing home sales? Well, what's the impact of housing construction, existing home sales, and the things people buy to put in their homes? And if you look at it in its broadest measure, then the housing market, very broadly defined, is 18 to 20% of the economy. The Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City did a nice study a few years ago coming up with that estimate. If you measure it at its narrowest, what impact does housing construction have? Then it's about 5 to 6% of the economy. But in California, both those numbers are somewhat higher than the national economy. The real estate market here is a more important part of the state economy than nationally it is.
Okay. Well, David, we have run out of time. We've been privileged to have David Burson with us from PMI. Thank you, David, so much for spending a part of your day with us today.
Bruce, it's been great. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
Catch Bruce and the Norris Group team March 30th in San Francisco as Bruce teaches his California-only Essentials course live in association with the Global Real Estate Investment Club. Visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or call 951-780-5856 today for more information on this event and Northern and Southern California REO boot camps coming up in April.